The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent.
And we can start our intro. And here we go.
We're back. I like this hook. You got a book you want to tell us about? Well, let's talk. There's no other place to do it. Only on Cast the Craze. Cast the Craze.
Welcome to Cast the Craze Podcast Live. I am your host, Sam the Crazy Man Vera, and I am with
George the Dreamer Medina.
Who you are, who you
George,
be, what's your
dreamer,
name, who
Medina,
I see.
George, the dreamer.
Get down with the get down. So welcome to Cast the Craze. We had some technical issues. This is our fourth attempt going live today on Facebook Live.
We're live now.
So we are live now. Okay, so I'm going to just type in, we are live. We will have a special guest on the show today.
I like it. Multitasking, bro. Later. Awesome.
Felix. I have a surprise for all you beeples out there.
I thought you'd open with that.
I was going to open, but I didn't know if it was
going to. Oh, you wanted to make sure everybody saw my young ass. All right, go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm looking for it. Hold on.
Oh,
so.
Ready to rock.
Yes. So, Mr. Medina.
Many years ago. This is how long we've been rocking together, though. Oh, here we go.
Yeah, no. Mr. Medina.
Yeah.
Back in the days on the Boulevard of Linden. I see you too. I'm not putting up your images. We'll put it up when you're on the screen. So, Mr. Medina, back in the days. I'm gonna take you back to the youngin, to his son.
Throw it back. Throw it back.
The son.
Just give it to the people.
Ooh.
Tell us a little bit about Catch the Craze.
Catch the Craze is an ingenious magazine that we came up with to kind of promote ourselves. Being that we are an independent company, nobody knows who we are, we decided we're going to put together a magazine that tells everybody who we are, where we came from, what our plans are, what our books are going to look like. We have everything from interviews to comics in there. We have a lot of stuff in there that I think people are going to enjoy. And it's going to go out to the industry first, and then we're planning on releasing it out to the public so that everybody can know who we are and what we're all about.
Any last words for your audience?
Catch the craze, baby!
Dude, I needed to eat a burger,
that
bro.
Boy was
Holy
wearing his
shoot.
Big brother's clothing.
I was wearing my father's clothing,
were
bro.
Were you shopping at a thrift shop?
Yo, I don't know what the hell I was. But it was early 2000s? I thought I was in the 90s.
It was.
Throwback, way back Wednesday.
Yo,
way back Wednesday.
I was digging in the crates.
Let me ask you a question. Do you have any footage of you at that age?
Yes. But I'll show that sometime later down the road.
Yeah, show it on April Fool's Day. That'd be great. Thanks.
That's
what are you doing over there, dude?
My mic is
my
cold is acting up.
God. Anyway, yes, that's a throwback, dude. Wow, that was at the Gibbs School, right?
Yeah, that was
at the Gibbs School.
Yes.
We would meet up in there like it was our office, and we just take over the classrooms and meet up, set the cameras up. Oh man.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Actually, I swear, I was going through my archives and
that's amazing, dude.
I was like, oh damn, he was a youngin.
Young buck.
Yeah.
That's a young buck right there.
Yeah, that boy was just
that was like 20 years ago. Almost.
He was a baby. He's like Goonie Google.
That was almost 20 years ago.
20 years ago. Yes. Woo. So later on today on the show, we'll have Ray Felix, who joined on our Facebook. And if you are listening, we will be discussing the controversy between DC Comics and Bronx Heroes and Arctic Press about Punchline. And that's not a joke. So there's no punchline to this. But, this is, a trademark issue. So we'll find out more about that when we talk to Ray Felix. Any specific topics we got on today?
Yeah, actually, first, let me just thank our guest last week, Eric Hutchinson. He was on the show, and that was a great show. He was full of a lot of... He was full of a lot of energy and information. And thank you so much, Eric, for taking the time to come on the show and talk to us. And everybody who we interviewed last month, thank you guys for coming on the show. This month, we've recorded our shows. So we have our guests. Unfortunately, next week we won't be having a guest because we got stood up. You forgot about that for a second.
Yeah. So George and I had to ad lib.
Yeah, yeah. We had to freestyle.
We had to freestyle. Yes, right.
So next week there will be no guest.
No.
But the week after that, we're gonna have Sean Daly on the show, and we're gonna have Lucas. Jesus, last name just escaped me.
Skywalker.
Luxor. So he's going to be on the show at the end of the month, and that'll be great. But what we will be doing for the rest of the month, and the topic on Get Your Meds, I thought would be kind of interesting, is to talk about the four P's of marketing. And I don't want to bore you with too much information, but I think it's important for us as creators to also know how to promote our product, how to put it out there, and how to treat it like a business rather than just a hobby that we want to do. And, oh, this sounds cool. Let's just get together and do something like this.
Right.
It's a business, and you have to treat it that way. So the topic today is product, your product planning. Little history about how I came up with this.
Yes, please do tell.
I don't want to bore you, so I'm going to give you the Cliff Notes.
Educate me, please.
In 1964.
Going back.
A gentleman by the name of Neil Borden. Okay. Whoa. He came up with this, he coined a phrase called the marketing mix. And the marketing mix was a model that was comprised of 12 codependent ingredients that he thought were needed in order to promote your product. And one of them was product planning. The 12th were product planning, pricing, branding, channels of distribution, personal selling, advertising, promotions, packaging, displays, servicing, physical handling, fact finding and analysis. Then
there, stuff.
Yeah. Then there were four market forces outlined by Borden. Now this guy put a lot of thought into this, right? He said there are four marketing forces that influence the marketing mix: consumer buying behavior, motivations and habits, industry and trade behavior as evidenced by wholesale and retailers, competitor positioning, behavior and industry response, and governmental regulation of the industry and or market. Okay? That's a lot of ingredients to keep track of, right? So then...
It's like Hungarian goulash.
Yeah. So then later on, a gentleman by the name of E. Jerome McCarthy simplified his initial list of 12 marketing mix ingredients, and he essentially called it the four P's of marketing. And that's where we come in. So the four P's of marketing include product, price, promotion, and place. And we're going to be talking about those four P's as the month goes on. But today, I want to talk a little bit about the product. And in our case, the product for us becomes our books.
Yes.
Our creations, what we create. And on Instagram a few weeks ago, I went on there and I asked a couple of people, just to break down what they thought were some of the things that they took into consideration when putting together their books. I always thought that when in writing or when we're doing these comics, I always say that a great artwork will get you your first issue sold, but a great story will have them coming back.
Yes.
Right. So it's not just enough to have a good artwork. It's not just enough for good artwork to be out there, but also you want your story to be great.
Right.
And so I put that up there. I put it up as not a poll necessarily. And let me see if I can find it while we're live on the air. Hold on a second. Here we go.
Should I juggle?
No, go ahead. All right. So when it comes to producing your comic, right, I ask people to rank the importance of the following factors in terms of quality. Okay. I had up there artwork, story, color versus black and white, single comic or ongoing series versus graphic novel, and cover design.
Right.
And, the responses were pretty interesting, man. Some people said they went with artwork first, then color versus black and white. Social media presence they threw in there. They decided then whether it was going to be a single comic or a graphic novel. And cover design was last. Now, me personally, I think that story is the most important thing. And then from story, I would go to cover design. Right. Okay. Because the cover is going to sell you that book, right?
Right.
The artwork. And then I can go into, okay, am I going to print this in black and white? Or am I going to make this a single story, or am I going to split it up or am I going to put it as a graphic novel?
Right.
What do you think? How would you break that down if you had to break it down? What is the most important thing for you when putting your product together?
The finished product first, that's the most important. And then once you have that, it's just basically packaging it.
So when you decide what your finished product is, do you mean like, is it going to be an ongoing series versus is it going to be?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So am I doing a one shot? Am I doing a mini series? Am I doing an ongoing series?
So that's going to be your first thing.
That's my first thing.
The first thing you're going to think of.
It's, what's the purpose of this product? Mm-hmm. Once I've landed on that, then it's finishing the product. And then once that's done, now is thinking about the channel to take with the product.
Okay, so what about the right? Obviously the story has to come into effect there, but and I know nobody intentionally does this. Nobody says, "Hey, I'm just gonna write a crappy story and I'm just gonna let the artwork sell it." You're obviously gonna try to work on the story as hard as you possibly can. But what is more important to you? Do you think artwork is more important, or do you think story is more important?
No, it's the story and it's the content. It's the life of the characters. So it's the plot. You have a premise, but then, now you need the, antagonist, protagonist, you need a theme, you need a purpose of the story, you need heart. Mm-hmm. So does the story have heart? So it's just creating the timeline. You have to have a character profile, you have to have their history, right? So you create the premise of your story, then you identify your key characters, how do they link up to the story? Then you have to have a backstory, right? So every single one of your characters has to have history. It's like you're creating a Bible.
So that story's top. That story probably to me is, and that's why I say to me that story is the most important thing.
Yes.
Because it's what's going to give life to everything else. Without that story, you have nothing.
Yes. You can have,
you really don't have a product.
You can have great art and a horrible story. Hence, when you think about Image in the early days, a lot of the artwork was beautiful, but the story didn't have life, right? Only a few titles lasted and stood the test of time, right? But there was a lot of them that fell to the wayside. They looked pretty, but they just really didn't have any heart.
Did you like Rob Liefeld's stuff?
I liked Rob Liefeld's his style of art because it was different from everybody else's. It was over-embellished. It was sometimes crazy, like that one where he did Captain America, where his chest came out further than the shield. It was just crazy how disproportionate it was.
It was, dude.
Right? But there was something about the way he drew the characters that made you want to pick the books up.
Yeah, he had something, right? Yes. His anatomy was completely off.
Crazy.
And his perspective was off.
Yes.
But for some reason, it worked. And I wasn't a big fan of his work, but people loved Rob Liefeld.
Yes.
They really did.
Yes.
It was crazy.
Yes. But not every story in the Image world lasted.
Right.
Right? It just didn't have heart, but they were beautiful. So that's why I believe it starts with the story. You have to have a strong, you can have a great story and the artwork is subpar, but the story carries everything.
Yeah.
Because you fall in love with the characters, and that's what keeps you coming back. I think if you're an artist, you appreciate the art, so you're going to pick up specific artists' work.
Yeah.
But if you're a fan of literature, if you're a fan of storytelling, you're going after the Alan Moores of the world, right? You're looking for their books because you're going to get something in return.
Yeah.
I
remember
if you can get a great writer and a great artist like Alex Ross. When he started painting the DC, the Justice League, his artwork was crazy.
Yeah.
And it just took a great story and enhanced it.
Right.
So, you get the best of both worlds.
But you know what? I feel like DC and Marvel can take chances on like art, right? They can say, all right, let me see if this works. Whereas we can't, as independent publishers, we can't really take those chances.
Right.
I think that one of those stories where, and I'm not saying that this artwork was bad, but I don't think that a lot of people maybe appreciated it.
Right.
But remember when The Walking Dead first came out, when Robert Kirkman came out with that book?
Yes.
That book was in black and white.
Black and white.
And everything else was, image. A lot of the stuff printed was being in color, and that color is everything. And then here comes Robert Kirkman, throws in, The Walking Dead, and it's in black and white, and it sells like crazy. And I'm not saying the artwork wasn't great, but it wasn't what you're seeing in other books. It was more like, but the story itself was so good that the books just sold, and it became a TV show that's still around now, and it got quite a following.
I equate the art to the cover. If you go into like a Barnes and a bookstore, that cover attracts you.
Yeah.
But the story keeps you coming back. It keeps you turning the pages.
Yeah.
Right. You can get turned off after those first couple of pages. Like, oh man.
Absolutely.
So you got to give them a reason to come back. And they have to be able to relate to a character or multiple characters. Sometimes it's one specific character. So I think relatability is key. And not everybody nails it. It's not easy to do.
No. Yeah, of course. But I think that when we're creating our stories, we have to, say, okay, what are we, because we may not have the money to pay the top artists out there. If you're an artist and you're a writer, you're ahead of the curve, and if you're a good artist, that's great because you can put out your books whenever you want.
Right.
But when you're a writer who's looking for an artist to draw your book, maybe you say to yourself, okay, do I have the budget to, hire that artist that charges $85 a page or $100 a page, for this 90 page book that I have? Am I going to be able to ever finish this book because I can't afford the artist?
Right.
You have to make sure that story is top notch. Right. If you can't afford that artist. So you have to take these things into consideration, I feel like, but never shortchanging. And I'm just saying, maybe you don't get the top artist, but you get somebody who can draw and can put your book out.
Right. I mean, I'm a perfect example of that. I can't compete with 99% of the artists out there. Right. But my story has heart, and my style of art just complements it in a way where people forgive my style because they walk away feeling good about the story and talk about Death and Nails in My Toilet. Right. They laugh. They become kids again. Right. So they excuse that. So I get a pass there, right? But I know that I'm not going to go in and illustrate. It's forbidden. I'm going to find somebody else to do that, right? Because I won't be able to complement that book with my style.
Right.
So I know my limitations, so I think you have to know your limitations.
Right.
And let the audience be the judge. You don't know whether or not your stuff's quality. The reader is going to tell you whether it's quality. So I think you just got to put your heart into it. So if you've given it 100% and you feel good about what you've done with that product, put it out and let the audience tell you whether or not they agree, they think it's good. Because everybody thinks that their work is the best work. Yeah. Everybody thinks that they're going to be the next big thing. You don't know, dude. The world will tell you.
See, for me, I think that if, as an independent creator, if I have money in my pocket, right? And they say, okay, listen, this is the money you have designated for this book. How are you going to split that up? Okay, I'm a writer. That's cool. I got that covered. I'm going to write this book. But now I have to split this money between how much I'm going to pay an artist to complete it and how much I'm going to pay a cover artist to complete it.
Right.
I'm going to take the most money and give it to the cover artist, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah,
because that cover is what's going to have them pick up the book. I'm not saying that the artwork inside should be crap. I'm just saying that if I had to split my money, I'm going to pay the cover artist more money than I would pay. And if that cover artist and the inside artist are the same people, I have to explain to them, listen, I'm going to give you more money for this cover, but the interior pages, I can't pay you that much because it's just not in the budget.
Right.
And I don't know if that's realistic, and I don't know if that's, but I think that if I had to choose, that's how I would do it.
Right.
Because to me, that cover is also important because that's what's going to have them pick up the books.
That's the first step. That's attracting them.
But
the story's going to keep them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So the story I can control because I'm writing it.
Yeah.
So I have to make sure that that story is 100%. But if I have that money to have to split up, I'm gonna go hire that writer, that cover artist that's gonna give me a great cover.
Right.
That's gonna sell me that book.
Right.
Now, part of, and I don't think we spoke about this, but maybe hiring an editor also.
Yes.
Would be in there too.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I've done that for a lot of the books.
Yeah. So what do you do? You've hired it for like your...
All the children's books.
Children's books, okay.
Yeah.
So that's prose, right? The children's books are prose?
Yeah.
So you have an editor to...
Just proofread, right. Make sure that everything should be where it should be. Just identify the things that I might not be able to pick on because that's what they do. That's their specialty.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's...
And sometimes they give you recommendations. You know, they'll say, you know what, you use this paragraph in this context, you may want to use it in this context or whatever. And so what I do is I send it to them and then they resend me. If I did not allow to make any changes to my story, they highlight and make a recommendation in the notes next to it. So they'll highlight a paragraph in red and say, here's what I'm... And then I have to approve that recommendation before they're allowed to touch it. So that's the way I do it. So they all have to clean it up, make sure, you know, punctuations, all that stuff is there. But if they see something that doesn't make sense, they'll make a recommendation. This doesn't really line up.
Yeah.
And then I'll go, okay, I agree. You can go ahead and modify. Boom.
Oh, I thought that you would have to modify. Like, in other words, I always thought that because
it's really more like sentence structure. Just like, oh, this is out of place. Or I think some of the mistakes I made was I repeated something. We didn't realize it. They go, well, if this was said over here, did you really mean to do that? You know, so they'll pick up on things that sometimes your lazy eye doesn't pick up on.
Right, yeah, because you've read it so many times that you don't even realize.
Yes, but I do want to just highlight one thing. This is going to be the first time we use Skype, so we might have some technical issues trying to get, because our guest really wants to use Skype. So I was trying to work out some of the kinks, but it'll be the first time we do it. If it doesn't work, we're going to go straight to audio. But we're going to make the attempt. So during that transition, when our guest Ray Felix calls in about 4 minutes, I'm going to be playing around. So I'll have George do some talking as I'm trying to figure it out. And if I can't be successful, because again, it's the first time using it, we will go straight to audio.
All right. Well, that's and that does it for Get Your Meds. So yeah, product. Product is the first thing that we discuss today. We'll be discussing pricing next week. And again, we don't have a guest next week, but it would just be Sam and I one-on-one. And
it was a text.
Okay.
What is this?
I think we Ray might be. Also have
there's a watch party. Well, hey. They may be laughing as I'm trying to figure out the technical aspect of this, Mr. Felix Unger. So hopefully everyone's patient with me as I'm trying to figure this out. There's a watch party. No, I can see there's a lot of viewers not actually participating in the yes.
Yeah.
And it fluctuates. It's going up and down.
All right.
So thank you all if you're watching. Ray Felix will be on the show in a minute. We're going to go to commercial when we come back. Ray will be calling in and you'll be watching me work through the technical issues and try to get him live through Skype.
Sweet.
So let's go to commercial. Which one is this one? Whatever. Let's just do it.
I'm trying to catch it. Oh, what are we catching? What are we gonna catch? I'm trying to catch the craze. Catch the craze. The what? The craze? Like, does this go crazy? No. No. What are you wearing? What do you mean, what am I wearing? What are you wearing? I'm fresh. No one says fresh anymore. Why are you acting up? I'm not acting up. You're acting up. Come on, man. Stop acting up.
Candy girl. All right. We're back. Guess the craze. We're waiting for our guest to call. call in a second. I'm looking for my Skype. Where is it?
Yeah, dude, I haven't used Skype in like years. I it's funny because I use it for work, but I never use it like in my personal life.
No?
Nah. You use Skype a lot?
No.
All right. Yeah. Well, what you're doing?
Because FaceTime didn't work for some reason.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, because where would you put it up? It just comes up on the phone.
Yeah. Where's my application?
Oh, you got to download that bad boy.
I already did. This is no point, no. So, continue with your conversation, brother.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll take that time to let you guys know that it's going to sound like such an infomercial. I'm very proud to say that The Adventures of Wonder Duck, which is my creator-owned project. Is that him?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to find my Skype.
I've linked up with Darkfire Press. Check darkfirepress.com. And today, actually, it went on Comixology. So if you're on Comixology, you can pick it up. You can pick it up there. So The Adventures of Wonder Duck is on Comixology. So check that out. And if you guys want a printed copy of the book, go to Amazon, or you can go to BarnesandNobles.com, and or you can go to DarkfirePress.com. And there's a link on there to buy the book. Or you can go to my website at MedinaWhip.com to get that book. So, yeah, check that out. Sam also has his stuff on Amazon and on his website, iCreateStories.com. So you can definitely check that out. And I think we're getting Skype open.
Yeah, all right, you give it a shot now, brother.
There you go.
There's a missed call. Give it a shot again. So, again, I tell you, we're going to go through some technical issues as I'm trying to figure this out. Miss call. Let's
call him.
No, he's got to call me because I got to work through this. All right. So while you're doing
there
that.
There he is.
Did they go through?
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so that just got to. Bro. I got to just make sure.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh,
yeah.
Look right, at cool. that.
Perfect.
Where nice. What's going on, Ray?
Skype.
It's going down.
Chilling, man. How you doing over there? You got it all set up. Look at your artwork in the back. I like that.
Yeah, we got a bunch of shit in the back.
How's it going, man?
Should we get a curse? Is this a PG-13 podcast, or is it a...
It's more PG, but you know.
Oh, there you go.
Sometimes you, you know, we get a... Yeah.
There you go. Of course, you had to be the one.
Can you see us? You can see us, obviously, right?
I see desert dunes.
Desert dunes.
Desert dunes.
Oh, yeah, that's what you see. I see what you're saying. You see the background. He just sees the background.
Yes.
Hopefully everybody can see you.
All right, so you can see us, right? Yeah, you can see me, right?
You can't see us.
Huh? Did I just minimize you or something? You can see me.
There's a delay.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so I just gotta.
You're on the screen, Ray. Complete, like your whole face is on the screen. So you're the man right now.
Word. So welcome. This is our special guest, Mr. Ramon Felix. How you doing, brother?
I'm good.
So you look
all right. Good.
All right. Good. So don't worry about the delay. Just try not to choke on your beer. So
okay.
he said right. Okay.
So I'm sorry. What's going on here? I just expanded.
I'm good. Should I turn off the Facebook and keep the Skype on? Maybe that's why there's a delay.
Yeah, you're watching Facebook. That's why it's a delay on your part. Yes.
Ah, that makes sense. Okay, yeah. Yes. I can hear you guys.
There you go.
There you go.
I don't see you, but I can hear you.
You don't see.
It's fine.
Nah, nobody sees us.
Right, no see.
Nobody can see me.
That's cool because George is trying to hide the zit. So that's good. All right. So let's talk about this controversy.
Oh my goodness.
It actually worked.
Getting right into it, huh?
All
right.
What's up, Jer? Yes. So let's talk about this controversy. Oh, in fact, I got to get, while you're doing this, I'm going to add a source.
I got to apologize. He's got ADD, bro. He'll start a conversation and then he'll just zoom out and he'll just leave us alone. Yes. So what's going on, man? So how's it going, man, with this whole punchline thing? Talk to us.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I've been doing I'm really annoyed about it because I'm not going to name the name of the editor. DC already knows. Like, I contacted them.
Yeah.
I contacted their lawyer and then I just sent a cease and desist. I think it was a week or two ago, mm-hmm. maybe 2 weeks ago.
Right.
To their lawyers. And now they have different lawyers, I discovered, because they were in New York before. Now they're in California. So now they have California lawyers. But it all started back in Big Apple, Big Apple Con. Remember we used to do that show?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the day in 2005. And I was sitting next to this editor and his wife. And who shall remain nameless for legal purposes.
Yeah.
But they were looking at my portfolio, you know, and I was working on some stuff. And this is before, like, this is like 2005, right? So I was working on some, like, a proposal for DC, because that's what I used to do. You know, like, most creators, when they're starting in the game, I was only 5 years into the convention scene.
Right.
As far as, like, publishing my own stuff. And I was working on this Elseworld proposal for Batman that I wanted to submit.
Right.
And I was doing other stuff that got ripped off. I was doing also a Marvel proposal for the Red Hulk and stuff like that. But we'll go into that later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yes, yeah, so I created the Red Hulk, not Jeff Loeb. But and my story was better. And so we got to talking. He liked the artwork and he wanted the original art. And I was like, no. Now, we already had a relationship prior to this convention because I was a student in the School of Visual Arts.
Right.
I took his class. So we knew each other. Or, you know, even though my class was back in 1993. So you're talking about 1993, 2005, whatever. So we had a conversation, you know, at the time I was working for the New York City school system. His wife was an educator. So we clicked, you know, he was a teacher too, part-time. And I said, don't worry about it. He gave me his address. He said, oh, mail that to my house. And I was like, no, you live very close to, actually he lives 20 minutes away from where I live now. So, but at the time I was living in the Bronx and I was like, oh, no, you know, I'm going to be, what's your next convention? He says, oh, I'll be at, you know, Baltimore Con. Yeah. I said, oh, I'm going to be there too. So, I mean, I didn't have a table there, but I was going to go hang out with my cousin because we like to do that show. I went, you know, we met up, like, I think it was like maybe like 2 or 3 weeks later, you know, back then there wasn't like shows every weekend.
Yeah.
And then I gave him like just like plot synopsis, script, all the art designs for all these different characters for an Elseworld futuristic story that takes place, guess what year?
Uh-oh.
2020. So,
nice.
And it was about the next generation of Batman characters. So all the Batman characters are old, right?
Right.
I'm aging them. So Batman's 70. You know, all these characters are old. Joker's an old man. All, you know, Ra's al Ghul, you know, he's younger than everybody else, but he's still old. And basically, I gave him even 5 finished pages of both 5 finished, mostly inked, and then 2 pages were like, I think, penciled and ink wash.
Right.
So I basically gave him the whole kit and caboodle. And part of those designs was included was Punchline. She was one of the characters. So she was one of the, there was a gang called the Punch and Judy Gang, and she was a member, and she's the one that is a disciple of Harley Quinn.
Right.
After the Joker dies. And the characters, everything was basically written out, and they've been ripping that off for, like, I didn't even realize, like, the Batwoman show, it was a comic first. I had, when I was being sued in 2010, is the same time that they were actually ripping me off. And I sent you guys a bunch of images. So the Green Lantern looked like Mystery Man, my character Mystery Man.
Right.
It's right back there. And they did several issues where he became a hobo in space. And my character is a homeless man who can time travel. That's the same year they got rid of Superman's underwear. My character Omnipotent, which was like a parody of like a Superman-like character,
right,
had no underwear. you know, stuff like that. And then they had a Batwoman had a villain who was an identical identical design as this character that's, I don't know the character's name, the last name is Kane, but apparently Batwoman has a sister and her sister is like a Joker-like villain, like a goth chick, and it was identical.
Right.
You know, hairstyle, they didn't change anything. They just added more details to embroidery, whatever. So stuff like that. And, you know, and I was so busy with the lawsuit, I actually didn't even learn about this stuff until after the lawsuit. So we're talking about 2014. I'm in a dollar box just picking up, trying to, because I didn't buy Marvel and DC books during the lawsuit.
Right.
You know, the Damian Wayne character, I didn't create him, but the clothes that he's wearing, the design was for my own version of a Robin that I designed. So it's just weird. It's the 10th anniversary of my lawsuit. It's 2020. That was 2010. Jeez. And they just pull out this punchline. Now, ironically, a lot of these characters that I sent to them, I forgot which one it was, but they showed one character in a book, or it was a storyline. There was a storyline in the Batman comic book after, I started reading Batman again after the lawsuit. And, I think Grant Morrison was writing Batman and Robin. So Dick Grayson was Batman. And that wasn't original because they made him Batman in 97 as well. But it was the story about it was very similar to what I had written down. And then there was a character, you know, there was like some similarities in the story. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, oh shit, what's this? So yeah. I started going back and started researching. And then I did see they stole a lot of stuff. So plot-wise, design-wise, like I said, like Damian Wayne's costume was very similar to the girl's costume that I designed with the hoodie and, you know, oversized Robin jersey. It was oversized because it was more like a skirt for her.
Right, right.
It was a whole bunch of stuff that was just... And then at that point, I had just finished a lawsuit with them. What am I going to do, go to court with them again? You know?
Right.
So I just let it go. And then I found out about the Batwoman and all that stuff like that, you know, years later. And I just ignored it. You know, what can you do? You made a submission, you ignore it. But now I'm like 46 years old now, you know, man, you're talking about like from 2005 to now. I mean, it's like, you're talking about almost 20 years, right? So or 15 years. I'm just frustrated, pissed off. I mean, the Signal has ripped off Black Power. They put him in a new book called Batman and the Outsiders, and they teamed him up with Black Lightning. Now, what's funny is that Trevor Von Eden, the co-creator of Black Lightning, drew Black Power. That was like, right. And Punchline, I published in A World Without Superheroes, the same book they were suing me over.
She's in print. In other words, your Punchline is in print.
She was in. I put her in print in 2010 because I kept seeing these similar likenesses from this one script. Like, they just killed Alfred. And that was the beginning of my story, where Alfred is killed by the Joker.
Oh, you know? Okay.
But now they changed it. Tom King had, it was a terrible writer, Tom King, but he's like, he basically had Alfred killed by Batman's father from the Flashpoint, which didn't make sense because I always thought the Flashpoint Batman was a good guy. They made him a bad guy.
Right. Now, Ray, obviously you've been in contact with your lawyers about this. Is there anything
that you may not be
able to talk about, or?
I'm not mentioning names of people and stuff like that, but everything else, it's all right, because what's funny is the irony of this is that I already started using my design characters over the summer for a book called Red Rage, Bronx Villains number one. So I basically changed the characters so it doesn't reflect DC characters,
right?
And I tweaked my own stuff, my own designs, and I was like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna put this out." So right. I started using it. I put that book out, and then I was actually working on a new story of Punchline in her own comic book because she appeared as a side character. She appeared in World Without Superheroes for like a page,
right?
You know, and she didn't have dialogue. She was just kind of there. It was like, and then in 2012, I put her as part of the coloring book for the Women of Bronx Heroes, which I was launching. That's when the Roach, Heavy Traffic, and Black Power first appeared. It was an activity book that we were selling at, you know, the Bronx Heroes Comic Con. And we sold them everywhere, all the shows, you know? Right. So between this character that of Batwoman that's now on TV that I created, the Signal, which is a direct ripoff, when they called him the Lark, he's still a direct ripoff of Black Power. And now they're doing Punchline, which is right out of the script, you know? Yeah. I was like, fuck these people. I'm gonna send them a cease and desist. I'm done. You know, it's like I'm not a little kid anymore.
So let me ask you something, right? Your lawyers, do you have a case? Like, how are you gonna be able to battle this, or is this something that you're like, they're like, well, you know what, let's see what happens?
I'm hoping that most things don't go to court. I mean,
okay.
So I'm hoping that we could settle mm-hmm. on something, you know? I mean, I feel like I've been screwed for the last, since I was, you know, even before that whole situation with this, you know, this former professor who I considered, like, you know, not a friend, but like, you know, an acquaintance, because we know mutual people. You know, it's like when I was 14 years old, you know, I was sending stuff to D.C., and that stuff got ripped off too. That's where they got the Red Hood from. I created, when Jason Todd was killed, I drew a full comic book, sent it to DC Comics as a 14-year-old in 1988, only to see the Red Hood appear, a resurrected Jason Todd, you know?
Right.
And it reminded me also when I was in class with this teacher, we had one session where we talked about characters who were never resurrected in comics and how would you do it? So Gwen Stacy, Bucky, and Jason Todd were one of the, in 1993 was the topics that we talked about. So, you know, this guy was like fishing from ideas from his students, clearly, you know? So, you know what I'm saying? Like way back when.
Right. So is this something that you have to come out of pocket for your representation, or is it like a pro bono case?
Of course. No, yeah. It's not pro bono. When you're dealing with, when you deal with, like Bleeding Cool did an article about me trademarking it when they announced it. I was like, damn right I did. It's like, that's my character, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, when they announced it, I checked it. I was like, you know what? They didn't trademark this. My character is already protected under the Bronx Heroes copyright and the World Without Superheroes copyright. You know, the book that she appeared in my book was a book that was a subject of that they sued me for 4 years and we were in court and then we settled. So you're damn right I'm going to trademark it. You're sleeping at the wheel and you didn't trademark your character. I'm taking it because it's mine. Right. You know, I rightfully created this, and they changed it. They threw a dress on her. You know, that's fine. But essentially, the concept of the character being a Joker villain and working with the Joker is that's exactly what I wrote. That's exactly what I gave them.
And the name, right? The name as well, Punchline itself.
The name Punchline is the character. Okay. You know, since then, when I was working on the book, this summer, it's already in. Like print, it's like you could buy it online on my website. Not that I'm plugging, but and the thing about Bleeding Cool is that they didn't even call me to, you know, get a quote, and then they didn't even call. There's another guy named Punch that has a Punchline book from Antarctic Press, and they just did this article saying DC versus Antarctic Press versus Bronx Heroes. I mean, you know, that's great that they brought it to light. That's good, but it's like, come on, you're a reporter. You own this website. Bleeding Cool is very reputable.
Yeah.
He didn't call me or the Tap Dance Killer also had a character called Punchline. So there's three indie people with a character named Punchline, and DC just goes ahead and creates a character called Punchline.
How did the reporter for Bleeding Cool get wind of it?
That's what I want to know. I think DC contacted them and put the blood in the water to make me look bad.
Hmm.
Because I didn't advertise that I went and trademarked it.
Yeah, they actually, I'm looking at the article now, they actually had artwork, like they had your artwork for Punchline where she's kind of standing hunched over with some punching gloves on.
And
I was like, damn, I guess your artwork is out on the internet. They probably just pulled it out and put it on the...
Pulled it because I already had it for sale because, you know, the book, like I said, was already in the works and I just put it out. I was like, what am I waiting for? Put this shit out. You know, like the Red Rage book, like before Christmas, I put that book out. So, you know, I'm constantly creating, and because, you know, you're an independent guy too. When you're ready to put your books out, you put them out.
Yeah.
So my stuff is already on sale. It's already in the market, you know?
Okay.
But what's interesting is that this article brought it to light. So it's like, I actually made like 11 sales.
Wow, man.
And then the Antarctic guy, I spoke to him. You know, this is what I'm talking about, like being a reporter. It's like, you're a reporter. why don't you call the people that you're reporting on? Why don't you get their intake? Like, you guys, you know, contacted me, right? That's what your guys are, podcasting reporters. That's right. What you should be doing. Sorry, yeah. I was inking.
Have you reached out to Bleeding Cool? Have they responded to you in any way? Okay.
He made a claim. You know, Miguel Guerrero. Remember Miguel?
Yeah. Miguel Guerrero.
Miguel Guerrero reached out to them. I wrote to him the same day the article came out. He never responded. Miguel reached out to him. He responded to Miguel. And then we started a three-way Twitter feed call, which is still posted on Twitter, because as far as I know, you can't delete it. Mm-hmm. We can't edit it. He can delete. So he made claims that I never reached out to him. And then Miguel texted me, he's like, hey, I'm talking to this guy. Why don't you come on? And I jumped on Twitter. So I just copied and pasted my message from Messenger onto his tweet, and then he deleted it. So clearly that tells me he's like a puppet for DC, you know?
Right.
No disrespect, but, you know, clearly if you're not willing to get the, you know, both sides of the story, then you're basically working for DC. And my mind is, how did you know I trademarked this story? It's not like I went and advertised and say, hey, look, I'm trademarking this story. No,
right.
I didn't, you know? My motto now is, when these big guys want to steal from you, steal from them back. They want to steal your characters and your ideas. Guess what? Publish them.
Right.
Put them out there.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I remember back in 2010, or, you know, when you were going through that whole thing with Marvel and DC, over the word superheroes, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
You basically, you won that case, and in winning that case, what you have to do now is you have to publish a book every year with the word superhero in it. Is that
every 3 years? Correct? Every 3 years.
Every 3 years.
Yeah.
Okay. And so Punchline wasn't one of those books while you were going through the whole process with them.
She wasn't. So World Without Superheroes is. It's not the first comic I put out. I think it's the second book that I put out.
Right.
But what happened was, when the lawsuit started to happen, I started to put out other books. So I put out World War Heroes. I started doing offshoots. Like Bronx Heroes 2.0, Black Power, Roach. These are all characters that were all supposed to be originally intended for A World Without Superheroes.
Okay.
But when the lawsuit happened, I was like, oh, I might lose this trademark. I need to, you know, diversify. So I started diversifying and started taking characters I took later issues that were going to go for World Without Superheroes and started putting them into their own titles.
Gotcha.
And Punchline was just a character. Yeah, she was actually, the annual was a pornographic. I made her a porn star in the character and in the book.
Yeah.
You know, hold on, I'll grab it for you. Hold on, it's on the wall. Hold on.
She said, I'll grab it for you. A Ray setup.
Look at that.
So,
see, you're an Iron Man fan.
To make a funnier thing is that this was the book that came out, and I believe it's like 2009, 2010, around that time.
Yeah.
So this was already published for a decade, and whenever I do the books, I always like put the first one that I take out the box and put it in a frame.
Okay.
And put it on the wall. So if I open it up, this is about a superhero who basically becomes a porn star, like a sidekick who goes down the wrong path and ends up being like a porn star celebrity. Like, you know, she's like, it's almost like taking the concept of like a Kardashian or something, but this is before the Kardashians.
Right.
And saying like, well, if you became popular as a superhero, and then she was fell out of fashion because she stopped being a superhero for a bit, and then she became a porn star. And then, she's in this magazine, and the guy is actually reading the Mystery Man, the main character is in this porn shop reading the magazine, and he thinks there's a secret message, you know, like some secret conspiracy message that she's calling it. Like there's a cry for help, you know?
Right.
So, and if you look at Omnipotent, remember Ultraman in DC? They did a cartoon called Crisis on Two Earths, and then they made him look very much like Omnipotent.
Right.
No, he has no red underwear. He's not, you know, he's a superhero, like a Latino superhero character. But if you look at that cartoon, they made him very much like him and not like DC had him, which was red and blue. He had no yellow in the comics. And he right. still is only red and blue. He's still not, you know, they still draw him the same way they drew him back in the 60s.
Right.
So, and then they had a Black Lightning character there. And you know what they called him? Guess what his name was in that cartoon?
Yeah, what's that?
Black Power.
Black Power.
Now this, and Ryan, this, our book, the Black Power comic book was already out 2 years before that cartoon.
Really?
Hmm.
So they're watching, you know, they were watching before they sued me. I think because when the New 52 launched, there was a book called Earth 2, which was the Justice Society book. And the second issue said, and this was 1 month into the lawsuit. It said, in a world without heroes, but I think it was in the description, one of the CBS, whatever it is, the comic news thing,
yeah.
said, in a world without superheroes. And they used that title again for as an ad. They were saying a world without superheroes, but it wasn't on the book. It said, in a world without heroes. Mm. And when they sued me, I was like, well, you guys are telling me that I'm like infringing on your properties, but you're using practically the entire title of my book on here. And at that time, my trademark was validated by the federal government, so you can't right. do that. Wow. You know? So on this page, you have Punchline right there.
Right.
And this flashback with Glamour narrating her story as a how she gets into drugs. And, you know, it's actually inspired by a real person that I knew.
Right.
That's a whole nother ball of wax, but most of my comics are based on people that I know. I just turn them to superheroes. So you got Punchline right there. On her arm, it says clearly Punchline, you know.
Right.
And so
that was her first appearance.
This is her first appearance.
Okay.
Back 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
You know, might be even earlier. It might be 2009, but it was right around that time. Because, you know, when I did the conventions, it was always... I always release my books right before my show, so all my new books would feature in that time. So, I'm looking at this ad that this photograph here was taken in 2008, so it's somewhere in that line between. I was working at a school in Queens here, and that's where that photograph is from. So, this book is somewhere between 2008 and 2010.
Gotcha.
And plus, I've reprinted it so many times, I would have to go back into my invoices
to
actually find the actual date.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have the little CG. And I used to do CGs back then, too. So that's when I was still doing animation. And now I'm kind of falling off a little bit, but trying to get back into it.
Right.
So you submitted the cease and desist letter. And how soon after did you get a response?
They just responded, I think, 2 or 3 days ago.
Oh. And that was like how long after you sent the letter?
I think they didn't respond until I sent them the physical letter. I sent them the email the same day that they announced it.
Yeah.
I contacted them because I had their New York lawyers, Kenyon and Kenyon, on file. I have their emails and stuff. So I reached out to their lawyer, their representation there. But since they moved to California, they changed representation. Right. And then I also sent them, and then about a week later, I sent them, after the email, I spoke to my lawyer, who's a trademark lawyer, and he's the one that gave me advice on the first case that happened. And then he told me, you know, have you done X, Y, and Z? I was like, dude, I did that already. I was like, what else do I do next? And he was like, well, do A, B, and C. And I was like, okay, I did A, I did B, I just got to do C. And then that's when I actually mailed out the physical cease and desist forms and, you know, the official letterhead and, you know, legal documents, legal jargon.
And
I just wrote it from scratch, you know.
The response, was it challenging your challenge?
You know what? I'll tell you something. I would say the California lawyers are more, responded. New York, you know, when the signal came out and I was like, hey, that's a rip off of Black Power. He's even his old color, you know.
Right.
They were like, no, it's not. It's not. New York lawyers like, no, it's not. It's a coincidence. Is it?
Right.
And then I was like, okay, you're right. It's a coincidence. So then I took a comic book, scanned the picture, put it on Photoshop, colored it in purple, then sent it back to them. I said, what do you think about that? Then they didn't respond, but then they changed the name of the Lark to the signal and then they changed his costume. And then it looked different. I was like, okay, that's good. It worked, right? You advocate for yourself, it worked. They changed the costume. But now, since he's become Batman and the Outsiders, they're going back into that old design, making him look more like he did before.
Right.
And
so
I'm just like, that's not going to happen. So.
Right. So,
so,
do you think this is like, based on the response that you received, is this going to be an uphill battle?
It's hard to say because they just told me they're looking into the matter. I can read the letter. If you want to read the letter, it's okay. It's, let me see. Close this up. I can read the actual letter, you know. And let me see. DC, cease and desist. I'm just looking it up real quick. Let's see what it says. DC Comics. Let's see the year here. See, I don't throw out any emails. I got shit that popped up from 2012.
Oh, I have everything. Let's see.
All right, so I wrote my letter here. And then I had the images attached to it. It was from 2012 and the other one. And then I put the comparisons. Yeah, when I put out a poster of Black Power.
Right.
And he was actually originally yellow and then yellow and black because we couldn't decide on the colors of him. And then Trevor says, you know, he looks like a black Wolverine. And then somebody else said that. Says, you know, I'm going to change it. I want to make him purple, you know, like Prince, you know, and purple is the color of royalty. Right. So I was like, if he's Black Power, he shouldn't be yellow. Yellow is like kind of cowardly. Let's make him the color of royalty. Let's make him purple. You know, that's like biblical. Right. So, and. But the Signal character's yellow and black. It's like, and he looks identical, you know? Right. You just throw a bat signal on him. So let me see this letter. All right, I found my first letter. Sorry about that.
Look, hey, Ray, so while you're looking for that, let me ask you a quick question because Aníbal Arroyo has a question. And you let me know if you can answer this because I don't want to get you in trouble with your lawyers. His question was, what are you hoping to gain ultimately? Is it more the right to the character, or do you see more to be gained, like money, et cetera, things like that? And if you can't answer it, don't answer it. I don't want you to incriminate yourself by answering on a video. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I want them to stop using my materials because it wasn't even an official submission. It was student to former teacher.
Gotcha.
Giving me feedback, and I got an email letter that I wrote him after I gave it to him in Baltimore, saying, you know, very clearly, I'm just looking for your feedback, you know, out of respect of who he is. I didn't say, hey, submit this to DC for me, you know, because I knew you don't have a contract with DC. You're not sitting in the room with them. The second you sit down, before you even submit anything to them, they make you sign a contract saying that, you know, you can't sue them, whatever.
Right.
And this guy was just, you know, he's like one of the top editors for Batman. So I was like, you know, just take a look at this. I just want your opinion. I'm not asking you to submit it.
Right.
I'm not asking you. And in the letter, it says that very clearly. You know, I said, I'm a career person. I'm a teacher. That's my bread and butter. But I just had this idea because he commented on the drawings that I did. I did my own versions. We're sitting together for a weekend at a table, you know, side by side. And he's looking at my stuff and he's like, this looks good. You know, and I already had a story in development. I already started drawing the comic book. Everything was already in process before I even met him to address that. He saw that I had the pages there. He was like, this is cool. You know. He liked it so much that he wanted to keep it. He wanted to take everything. And I was like, no, you're not taking any stuff. I don't, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I'm like, I don't know what you're going to do with this.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, so I'm not a fool, you know? It's like, I've been, you know, ripped off back and forth. So, by these companies. So I wasn't going to play stupid. I was just like, take a look, give me some notes. Mm-hmm. Literally give me some notes.
So it was at the time. It was just for feedback. It wasn't a submission. It was just feedback.
It wasn't a submission. Because if it was a submission, I would have to sign a contract.
That's right.
And if they stole it, they stole it. And there's nothing you can do because you signed a contract. And it's, you know, they stole it fair and square. But this was not a submission.
Okay.
It was me just saying, hey, what do you think?
Right.
So how long do you think this process will take?
It's up to them, man. I mean. It was 4 years in court over the word superhero because they kept delaying. That actually went to court and trademark court, which is like you're not in front of a physical judge, but you're on the phone with a judge and you're responding all online to trademark court, you know, the USPTO. But it's 4 years of literally every single month you know, roughly every 3 weeks, I was writing depositions back and forth.
Wow.
And they just dragged it out. They would not show up. They would delay. They asked for extensions. And it was frustrating.
Because
basically, they wore me down. I mean, yeah. They settled with me because my key for winning that case was proving that they did not create the word superhero because they believed that.
Yeah.
Even the judge believed it. Well, they have these comic books before you were born. Mm. They created the word superhero. They've been around since 1939.
Right.
And I was like, well, the word superhero was created in 1913.
Oh.
And I pointed the source out. I pointed it was the Airman's Outing, which actually somebody just did a comic book of it. I saw it at a comic book store.
Nice.
Oh, actually, no, it wasn't the Airman's Outing that they did the second source, which was Man and Superman just became a graphic novel. So they didn't even create the word Superman. It was a play in 1918 called Man and Superman. Mm. And it was a parody of the in response to Nietzsche.
Right.
So they didn't create Superman.
So
Airman's Outing was the superheroes of war was about the Red Baron. That was the very first superhero term. The one after that was a Western that was a silent picture that used the word superhero. Hmm. And by that, pre-existing before their company, the word superhero is generic. It's in the dictionary, it's generic.
Right, to help me understand, so once this was done and you settled, how were they able to then... Or the trademark judge determined that you two were the only ones who were allowed to use it, or whatever.
Well, when I gave up the trademark for World Without Superheroes, I said, "Well, if you want to," they wanted the trademark, they wanted me to lose it. And I said, "Well, I need the protections of a trademark from you guys." And the judge said, "So, what do you suggest?" So, we drafted up a contract that allowed me to continue publishing A World Without Superheroes because they wanted to charge me. They wanted me to pay them to use the word superhero.
Damn.
Took them like a few $100,000.
Wow.
That's what they charge people to use the word superhero. You see the word superhero anywhere? DC and Marvel got paid for that.
That's incredible.
They're like the mafia of the word superhero in every language around on the planet.
No way.
Only Marvel and DC could use the word superhero in a publication in an international fashion. They own international trademarks.
So you are the only one that's allowed outside of them
to publish the word superhero on a cover for sale. So we drafted up a contract that had an agreement, and if they violated it, they had to pay me physical money. They violated, if they used the term A World Without Superheroes,
They ever did want to use that term, they would have to pay you for it.
That's correct. Wow. They would have to pay me for using the word. A World Without Superheroes, that term.
Wow.
That's so fascinating.
I was able to stop a movie because there was some dude was making a movie called A World Without Superheroes while the case was going on, and I stopped him. He raised $10,000, and I was excuse me, what are you doing? This is still an active trademark. This case is ongoing.
Oh.
I own this trademark. You cannot use this term.
Wow, you know? Dude.
So I stopped him from. He still put out the movie and he changed the name, but it's on Amazon. But it wasn't good,
uh-huh.
You know. But I respect indie people. You know, he tried. He tried.
No, definitely.
You know, but so that's how I won. So I don't retain the trademark of A World Without Superheroes, but we came to an agreement that I can continue to publish it.
You can
indefinitely,
use it. Right?
As long as it's in print every 3 years, and that's what I've been doing.
Every 3 years, Wow, man, that is fascinating. Is that you went up against them and you actually won. That's
right, and I went without a lawyer. Now, what's funny is that the guy that everyone praises in England, because remember, they're not as corrupt because American judges are corrupt. The reason why he won is because you have Parliament, and his book, Zero to Superhero, we were being sued at the same time. And Jack Kirby's family's lawsuit started, I think, 6 days after my case. So they were on a suing frenzy. They had like 180 something cases open.
Oh my God.
On the trademark website that they were suing people for trademark.
Wow.
So I was one of 180. And the only reason why that guy was, number one, he was in England. Number two, his book was a business book. It was not a comic book.
Oh.
You know? And he did the same thing I did. He represented himself. But he was able to retain his trademark because it's an international trademark. It's not American. Mm-hmm. He's in England. You know, so that those are the differences, you know.
Damn. I'm sure you learned a lot about trademarking in that case, huh?
I should have listened to my dead uncle when I was 14. He was telling me, hey, you like to argue with people. You like to always be right. You should be a lawyer.
You should be a lawyer, bro. Wow. Well, here you are again, man.
Yeah, on the 10th anniversary, I'm here again.
10 years later, here we are again.
And, you know, I'm really hoping just to settle. I don't want to go into – I don't want to spend the next 4 years of my life doing this. I'm hoping for a peaceful resolution, you know. Yeah. Can I take them on? Of course. I live for this shit. I really do. I love to argue. I do. Do I really want to invest my time in that? No. I mean, fair is fair. Don't use a character. Change her name.
Right.
Change her face. You know, they put a dress on her and they change her colors, but you look at a black and white and a black and white, it looks similar.
Right.
You know, it's very similar. They just be honorable. Stop stealing from people. You know, like the Me Too movement, we have to have a movement for these big companies that steal from the little guys who are trying to make it. And that's why I started the hashtag burned by the big two. Mm. So if you're out there and you've ever been burned, like I've been burned by the big two, go after them. Use the hashtag. Let's drag these people out in the street, put their name out on blast, and embarrass them so we make it a global movement.
Like Gangs of New York.
That's what I'm hoping to do with this hashtag, because my partner, Tom Siaka, that worked with me on Trump Land, which we'll talk about, I guess, with him at another date.
Yeah.
His character, Astron, was also ripped off by DC. He worked for DC Comics in 1977, and he created Astron. George Perez and him went to high school together. They created this character, Astron, when they were both in Cardinal Hayes High School in the Bronx. So, and George Perez basically said, hey, you know, you can have the rights to the character, you know, because, you know, George Perez. And he gave George Perez his first job in comics.
Wow, that's fine.
So,
that's
awesome. So Tom Siaka was in DC. He was Rich Buckler inked the original character, Astron. He gave it out to everyone. He printed it. Gave it out old school. He had distribution. He had over 100,000 copies sold of Astron's original series. This is even before the first Star Wars movie. There's a Star Wars ad promoting the movie coming out in the magazine. That's how far back we go.
Wow.
And then the same creators, everyone inked it at DC. They inked a page. Tex Sierra, Tex Blaisdell, all these guys, you know, Rich Buckler did a whole bunch of stuff. Right. Jose Luis Garcia Lopez did a page. So he had all these top-notch inkers, professional DC inkers working on his book. And then the only two guys that declined to work on the book, everyone in the office worked on it. The only two guys that declined working on the book were the ones that created Firestorm in 1980, whatever it was, four or whatever. And same colors, same origin. You read the comic books back to back, it's the same thing. They basically ripped him off too. So, and he never sued them because he worked at DC. You know, you don't want to be blacklisted.
Right.
You know, just like my old partners, Gary and Ed, left me when I got sued by Marvel and DC. They're like, oh, we don't want to be associated with you. We don't want to ruin our chances in comics. Everyone has this pipe dream that they're going to be like wanted in comics, you know, make it big, work for the big two. But why? Because why work for the big two? They own all your property. You know, you don't own anything. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, how many creators that we see? Erwin Hayson, who was, you know, a good friend of mine who passed away, co-created the Green Lantern, Wildcat. He didn't get any royalties. All those Golden Age guys, they didn't get any royalties. Bill Finger got screwed. You know, Kirby got screwed. You know, they don't own those characters. So why do you want to work for them? You know, we're at a better time now because we have more indie creators and more indie comic books than the big two. They're facing extinction because there's so much independent companies, you know,
right.
out there.
Yeah.
Right. You know, so. Interesting. Any other questions that they had or?
Yeah, nah, dude. Let's see.
Post any images on there? Because I didn't.
So Ray Aniba has another question. He says, what's the biggest thing learned from the experience? What, if any, advice would you provide? And has this changed your views or motivations creatively or personally?
Yeah, I mean, I try not to take anything personal, but when you see your stuff out there, it hurts, you know? Like, when I was sued by the two companies that I spent, think about it, we're children, right? You guys, we all grew up reading comics. We all invested our education to learn how to draw, how to write. We got college. We went to college to learn how to do this. Some of you guys went to high school to do this. It's a life investment. You go to the cons, you self-publish, you're doing all this stuff just to get recognized, to try to make it, you know, and work for a big company. That's the goal, right? Right. So I spent 2010 was what, a decade ago. So I was 36 when I was sued. So imagine being 36 years old. I mean, look at this shit that I have. Everything here is like Marvel or DC. This is like, these are like my, this is my religion, right? The comic books is my religion in a sense.
Right.
And then the two cardinal bishops that run things are like, no, you know, they don't give you the blessing. They're like, no, we're suing you. Stop. And then to add insult to injury, they're stealing stuff.
Yeah.
From your books. They're stealing from your creation. So number one, you're not worthy because it is a racist industry. You know, people won't tell you that, but it is a racist industry. I had one editor tell me, complimented me. They read one of my books and they were like, this is one of the best comics I ever read. And I was like, he says, why don't you work for Marvel? And I was like, that's great. That's a great idea. How do I get a job at Marvel? And you know what he said? He says, well, are you Jewish?
Wow, really? Holy cow.
And I was like, oh, now I'm Puerto Rican. He's like, oh, no, never mind. Forget it. Now, he was joking, but it is a racist industry.
Wow, man.
He was joking, you know, but, and I took it as a joke, but really, that's what it is. I mean, how is it that these two big companies are in New York City and DC specifically is more white than anybody else? Marvel, I would say, is more diverse than DC, like creator wise, you know? But you don't see that many. The exception is Asian. If you're Asian, you're in, you know? But I mean, you don't see that many Hispanics. Back then when we were kids, you did. You saw like, you know, some, you know, but you had the people from Spain, you know? We live in a very diverse and very dark city, but the comic conventions, who they promote, you know, when you look at a table at Big Apple, or not Big Apple, New York Comic Con or San Diego Con, right. Who are they promoting? Are they promoting their artists of color? No, they're not. And they only started promoting women maybe 4 or 5 years ago because they got shit for it. So now it's all about women of color. That they're making they are making strides and moves, and you know, God bless them for doing that. You know, give them credit for credit where credit is due. But let's face it, you have an 80-year-old industry and your color line of employees is less than 10%. You know, give me a break. Mm-hmm. And you're in the most diverse city in the world, you know?
Yeah.
So that in a sense is racism. There's prejudice. You're drawing lines, you know? It's like a lot of creators came from the Bronx, you know? Right. So...
But it's also, I think it's subjected to the person responsible for recruiting. So there could be a bias there. But I think it's individual-based. So, I mean...
Oh, yeah, it's an individual. It's not everybody. Yes. I mean, you know...
Because
I'm glad that, you know, we were exposed. It was the Jewish culture that exposed us to this. You right. know? These are... I mean, where would we be without the Three Stooges or, like, Groucho Marx or, like, you know, the comic book creator is Will Eisner. I mean, if you look at my wall here, this is, like, all Will Eisner, right?
Yeah.
I got an entire wall. I love, you know, I mean, you know, I love, you know, the Jewish culture and superheroes and stuff like that. I'm not slighting Jews in any way or whites, but I'm saying it. We live in New York City is a very racist city. It's very white, you know, whether it be Italian or Irish or whatever. I mean, it's not everybody, but it is.
I think again, I truly believe it's based on individuals. And,
it's an individual basis, sure.
Yes.
It's the attitude of the industry.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's transcended. Where it becomes policy, just like in Asia, same thing. When you're in Asia, if they see American, they expect to see a blonde hair, blue eyed guy. Oh, you're American? Like, you know, when I got married, my wife said that, you know, you got married to an American. Her parents were upset. And then they met me. They're like, this guy's not American. Where is he from?
He's not American?
He's from that other American island called Brooklyn, or the Bronx.
Like, And it's you know, it's perception, you know?
Yes,
it's
it is. You know, and I think, but you know what? I think some of your experiences have made you who you become today. I mean, you've become entrepreneur.
Of course. Yes,
you know,
exactly.
You know,
well,
so.
It's definitely motivated you.
You know what I'm saying? So you've been able to, you know, muscle your way through it with your grit, passion, and determination.
Of course, of course. I don't let anything hold me down. I'm not one of those guys that like, oh, it's racist, so I'm gonna get out of it. Right. I mean, right. To me, that was a challenge. Oh, you don't want to give me a job? You know, it's like, all right. So, you know, I just start busting my ass. Like, I'm gonna do it myself. Right. I forgot which editor told me years ago. It might have been Tom DeFalco back in when Madison Square Garden had. It was in the year 2000 when I put out my first book, indie book. And just like Alien in Your Toilet.
Right.
I had an alien in my toilet. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I had a book called God the Second.
3 o'clock, you and me in the schoolyard.
No, I had a book about the second coming of Christ.
Right.
It was a comedy book like yours, a cartoony and stuff.
Right.
Because, you know, like you, my style is not the best style. My style is underground looking, you know, because it wasn't Marvel and DC that really inspired me to want to be a comic book people as a kid. Yeah. But it was really Robert Crumb in college. When I saw Robert Crumb and Ralph Bakshi and Heavy Traffic,
yeah.
And, Hey, Good Looking. And, you know, yeah.
Fire and Ice,
yeah. Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
I want to do this stuff, you know? And like, you know, and then reading, I met Spain Rodriguez and S. Clay Wilson and, that's why, you know, I just wanted to, like, be an underground artist, like, in San Francisco, you know? That's what really – and I love that style. That's why Alien in Your Toilet, man. If you were in the 60s, man, you'd be, like, the Robert Crumb, you know, yeah. Like, of New Jersey.
Yeah. Like, we're talking about timing. Yeah.
It's all about timing, right? Yeah. You know, we grew up in the time where it was Todd McFarlane and, you know, and, like, you guys talked about Liefeld earlier.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's funny is that McFarlane opened the door. He really did. Image Comics opened the door for a lot of people. Dark Horse too.
Yeah.
Now Comics, the defunct Now Comics, you know, they opened the door and said, "Hey, there's other things besides these other guys, these bums that don't pay us." But it also set a precedent for these companies to squash and say, "We're not highlighting anybody."
Right.
You know.
Right. Yep.
You know, when you think Marvel, you think Stan Lee. When you think DC, who you think about? Julie Schwartz. Who's that?
I think Alex Ross.
DC?
I think DC.
You can think of individual artists, but you don't think about who's running the show.
Right.
The face of the company. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, you don't.
You know?
Yeah.
That's true.
You know, in the 70s, it was Jack Kirby. You know, they even said, "Hey, Jack is here. He's at DC. We got him now." You know,
right.
But DC killed that real quick because they saw, well, these celebrities are bigger than us.
Yeah.
If we blow them up too big, they'll kill us.
Right.
Well, they'll be our look. Image Comics puts out more books and sells more books than Marvel and DC. Yeah. You know, look at the guys, Mark Millar. Those guys started Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
Millar World, you know, kick ass.
Yeah,
he's huge.
They don't want that to happen.
He's all over Netflix. I mean, he's part.
Yeah, he's all over Netflix. Yeah. I mean, come on, the guy, the movies, the Marvel movies that are the most popular, the Avengers, was based off of his comic books.
Right.
They don't put his name in the credit.
Yeah,
he doesn't get credit for that.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible.
You know,
absolutely.
So I mean, I don't know.
Wow.
I don't know.
Well, listen, Ray. Good luck to you, man. I hope this thing, you know, really works out and they give you your due. You know.
Well, hopefully, but you know, we live in an unfair world and you know, life is not fair. And so anyone who tells you that is lying to your face.
Yeah.
So you gotta get in your belly, crawl in the mud, and make sure you're on top at the end.
That's it. That's all it's about.
I'm gonna make sure at the end of this fuck fest, I'm the one that's doing the fuck.
Thanks for sharing.
Hey, yo, Anibal said that when he thinks of DC, he thinks of Bob Kane.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there you go.
DC.
Oh, Bob Kane.
Yeah.
Who was also a thief.
Oh.
Face the fact, Bob Kane really didn't draw much. He was like a headshot guy. I mean, if you look at all his comics, Jerry Robinson was his ghost artist for a long time.
Wow. Yeah.
Yes. And you think about. And then Bill Finger was writing everything, right?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you guys know the story real quick. Think about this. When Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster say, "Hey, we're going to sue," they went to Bob Kane. "Hey, we're going to sue DC for the characters we sold because it's making a lot of money," right?
Right.
They were going to try to get the rights back. And you know what they did?
What?
Bob Kane went behind their backs, backstabbed them, and told DC, hey, these guys are going to sue you.
Wow.
Why did he do that? Because he knew that that would probably happen to him, that Jerry Robinson and Bill Finger would be like, you know, fuck this guy. We're the one doing all the work. He's at parties and he's the face of the company, right? It's like, so he was like, make me the sole creator. He made a deal with the devil and where he's the sole creator of, you know, Batman created by Bob Kane. And that thing lasted all the way to the Batman Superman movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, for as long as I can remember, I always thought Bob Kane creator of Batman, you know?
Right. He didn't do shit. He didn't even design the costume.
That's crazy.
He didn't do anything. That it was all crazy. Bill Finger.
Yeah.
It really was. That's insane. People like, you know, people say, oh, in collaboration with, those are all legal terms.
Right.
You
know? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just like Stan Lee used, you know, some people say Stan Lee never said that he drew, but he never said he didn't.
Right. Well, that's what Aniba said. Bob Kane is sometimes he's accused of the same thing that Stan Lee was being accused, taking credit of stuff. But
yeah, he does. Yeah. You know, they just made a Stan Lee doll, some company, and he comes with an art pad and brushes. I'm like, what the fuck? He's not an artist. He couldn't even write. I mean, no disrespect. Stan Lee was a good showman, you know. I know people that personally knew him. He was a good showman. He was a good advertiser. He was the face of the company. He was a go-getter. I didn't know him personally. I can't judge him. But based on what's written in history, based on interviews by Jack Kirby, Jack Kirby said the only thing that Stan Lee wrote were the credits. Mm. That says it all.
Yeah, Jack Kirby, I mean, that drama's been going on forever with the
forever thing.
It always will. But, you know, they're both dead. Let's put them to peace.
Yeah, definitely,
you know?
For sure.
Yes.
For sure.
Now it's Ray Felix and DC
Comics. That's you. Now it's all you. Take it over.
Who created Punchline? Someone actually told me, your character looks nothing like it. I was like, hey, you don't know the story.
Yeah.
As if you knew the story, then you'd understand.
There you go.
You know?
Well, here it is. Time to tune in and find out the story on
That's right.
Craze.
Yes,
Cast
absolutely.
I love you guys' show. I love your advice, dude, man. You guys give great advice.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
You know, these insightful to get your meds. I mean, I'm like listening to you guys. Sometimes I listen to you like 2-3 times and I'm in traffic or I'm driving to work. That, I'm like, I gotta listen. These guys are, you guys are inspiring, man.
Thank
especially
you,
since
brother.
We,
Thank
we
you.
Came up together. I'm like,
oh, yeah.
It's really good to see that we're really, it is lonely at the top, right?
Yep.
Yes. Yeah, man.
And then, I mean, think about all the people. Let's have a moment of silence for all those who started with us.
Pour out a little bit of your beer for all the people.
Yes.
For all those creators that didn't make it.
Yes.
Yes. I think you're in our hearts. Never forget.
Oh, man, you're an animal. All right. You're great, man. Dude, thank you so much, man, for coming on, brother. Appreciate you.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I give a shout out to my website real quick?
Hell yeah. Absolutely. Go for it, man. What you got?
So if you want to get the real punchline, I should have titled the real punchline.
The real punchline.
The real, real
punchline.
Yes.
You can go www.bxhcc.com. That stands for Bronx Heroes Comic Con. Or you could just Google Bronx Heroes. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, and Twitter. So.
There you go.
Yes.
And don't forget to buy Bronx Heroes in Trump Land.
Yes, Bronx Hero Trump Land. And,
coming out in French and possibly German.
Oh, there wow.
Voulez-vous français? Good for you, brother.
I like French toast. But,
That's it. That's my plug.
Yeah. There it is.
And Tom Siaka. Shout out to Tom Siaka, my boy.
Dude, yeah, we got to get him on the show. We got to get him on the show for sure.
Well, thank you, brother, and much success to you, you know.
Yes,
and make sure you're not drinking and driving. And we look forward to following up on your story. So when we get a resolution, we want you back, and we want to get talk about what's going on.
God bless, gentlemen. Thank you for having me on. Thank you for hearing my story. You guys are better than Bleeding Cool. I'll tell you that right now. You get the real beef, the real story, the meat.
There you go. That's what's count. Go to the source, right?
Yeah,
go to the source.
Go.
Go to the horse's mouth.
Yeah, so have a good night, brother.
All right, brother. Peace out. Take care, man. Peace.
All right. So, what did you think, Georgie Porgy?
Dude, that was... I knew about the whole DC and Marvel stuff back when he was going through it in 2010. I didn't know the intricacies of it. I knew that he had to publish. I didn't realize that he had to do it every 3 years. I thought it was every year. And I didn't know exactly what it was that he had won.
Yeah, because we had that conversation, and you told me it was every year, I think.
Yeah, every 3 years. And he actually is allowed to use it, which is great. And I'm happy that he did that. You know, it's like he kind of stepped up to them by himself.
Yes,
man, by himself. No presentation. He was just me and
that's
you.
That's because he's from the Bronx. That's who's from the Bronx.
Mano a mano, bro. And he won. And they said, all right, fine. He won't go away. Fine. Here, you can use it. You know, and he's like, cool. That's all I want.
He said, don't be fooled by the rocks that I got.
Yeah.
I didn't want him
to answer any question in any way that would, you know, hinder his chances at getting some kind of positive resolution. So I didn't want him, you know, to talk himself out of a resolution, being that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why if people feel like, well, you guys didn't ask me enough, I wanted him to tell his side of the story. Whatever he could say, he was gonna say. But yeah, and Aniba, thank you very much for the questions. And
yes, and for those that did listen, you had an opportunity to actually write in and participate and ask us some questions. And if there are any other questions, you can also follow up and post it on our Facebook or YouTube channel.
Yeah.
We take comments there as well. Or you can write directly to Ray Felix. He did post his website, and we'll have the link to his website when we post this on YouTube.
Yep.
Cause this is on Facebook Live, but, we will, convert the video and post it on YouTube as well.
Yeah. And it'll air on Friday. So if you guys didn't catch it today,
yes,
you'll catch it on Friday. And that'll be the first, show of, March. And like we said, tune in next week. There won't be a guest on that show. It'll be Sam and I talking shop, talking about price, which is the second part of our 4-part series on Get Your Meds. Join us for that. And what else you got, Sam?
No, so remember, Get Your Meds, meds spelled backwards, is Sam does everything masterfully.
Boy,
just want to make sure I say that right.
There you clap. I think that every time a guest comes in, you have to play that.
Yes.
We should.
Yes.
Anyway,
all right,
well,
it's so I'm Sam. Late. I'm Sam the Crazy Man Rivera. This show went on for an hour and a half. We appreciate anybody who is listening. And if you are listening to our show and you enjoy the show, make sure you subscribe on our YouTube channel, on our Podbean channel. If you're listening to us on iHeart or Spotify or Pandora, make sure you subscribe and let us know what you think of the show. If there's anybody else you want to have on the show, please reach out and let us know that. If you want to be on the show, hit us up. I'm on Twitter. We're on, we're everywhere. So just put in Catch the Craze and you're going to find us. We appreciate you. Thank you for your support. I'm Sam the Crazy Man Rivera, and that is
that's me, George.
That's you.
The Dreamer. Medina. I thought we were signing off.
No, we are signing off.
This is just easy kids.
Crazy.
Yes.
Acquiesce. No, I was talking about my friend Acquiesce. I met him.
Say my name,
crazy. Right? This is what you were thinking?
Yes.
Oh, word.
He was crappy. He said, I'm the.
You're listening to Catch the Craze. You're listening to Catch the Craze. You are listening to Catch the Craze. It's the Craze.
You're listening to Catch the Craze.
Candy Girl.